Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, our podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, we appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars, yell and give us 4 stars. We are inclined to think you are a hater. It's that time of week where we do an interview normally, but this ain't really going to be so much an interview as much as sometimes, man, my homeboys need some help. And I do what I can to help my homeboys because I feel like I'm a good friend. And joining us, you can check him out producing Freddie and Fitz on ESPN Radio. My man, Shannon Penn. Now, I'm sorry, Shannon, go ahead and tell the people who you are.
Hi, my name is Shannon Penn, and I'm a Knicks fan.
Hi, Shannon.
Thank you for having me today, guys. I really appreciate you bringing me into this welcoming environment and making me feel appreciate it. So thank you guys.
Yeah, man. I mean, I want everybody to know we scheduled this before we knew what free agency was going to be hitting on, right? Because I know some of y'all probably think I'm out here picking on Shannon. No, I'm trying to help Shannon. I was going to be here to celebrate with Shannon if the Knicks got some people in free agency. And y'all got some people. Y'all got Reggie Bullock. Y'all got, didn't y'all just get Marcus Morris?
Possibly, yeah.
Oh, y'all got Julius Randle?
Uh-huh. Look at that. And wearing number 30, which we'll get into a little bit later, because apparently a lot of Knicks fans are upset about that.
Ooh, is that the Bernard King?
Mm-hmm.
Urgh.
Yeah. But before we even start with the Knicks stuff, I must say, you know who your real friends are, and you know who the people who are down with you when they're there to comfort you in your time of need. And I must say, when free agency hit on June 30th, and of course it was announced that Durant was going to the Nets and all these other guys, and once again the Knicks whiffed on the big name free agents, I was sitting there on my love seat, kind of down, kind of, you know, disappointed about the whole situation. And then I look at my phone. My phone rang, and I knew exactly who it was before I even had to look at it. It said, Bomani Jones. And I was like, oh boy, here we go. So I thought Bomani was going to call to rub it in, but no. That wasn't the case. No. Bomani was there to be a shoulder for me to cry on. So first and foremost, Bo, I want to say thank you very much, sir.
Hey, man, I got all the FaceTime audio because I was overseas, and that's how you do it for the cheap. You know what I'm saying? I had to make sure that you was okay, bro. I was legitimately, like, I felt like you personally deserved better.
Yeah, absolutely. I did. And I think doing this podcast with you today is a lot easier than doing it, say, the week of the free agency. Which brings me to my next point. I want to take this time to apologize to our good friend Joe Ovius back at 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh. He actually reached out to me that Monday asking if I would come on the show, but I was in no place to come on the show, bro. Like, that was it. Like, I was at my point, and you've asked me all the time, like, when is it going to be the point when you get off that New York Knicks narcotic, bro? And I was contemplating it. I was there. Like, I was at that point. I was at a point, and you know it was bad, where I couldn't even do a radio interview with one of my boys because I was so distraught about this situation. Like, I felt bad afterwards. I literally texted Joe 2 days later, like, oh, yeah, man, I apologize once again for not coming on. Usually I would do things like that, but I was in no place to discuss the Knicks at that point. Like, it wouldn't have made for great radio.
Yo, man, but I feel like there's bright sides to this that y'all ain't looking at the right way. You ready?
I'm waiting.
Okay. You would have liked to have had Kevin Durant, but you know if he would have gone to the Knicks, it would have gone bad, right? Right?
There's the likelihood of that. Yes. The probability of that would have been very high.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Like, it's like if a tree falls in the forest, it kind of – actually, I was reading a book about this, and it makes the point that if a tree falls in the forest, it actually does not make a sound. It only makes a sound in the presence of someone hearing the sound, right? Like, the surroundings do matter in that way. The explanation is a little more complex than I can probably share. But anyway, just trust me on this. If Kevin Durant were to fall with the Knicks, it'd make a sound, and that sound would be, damn, he got hurt again.
Well, absolutely, and I think with the Knicks and Durant, I think the injury, first and foremost, was a big hurdle there. Because I do think that, you know, Durant had a legitimate interest in joining the Knicks, but I think once he had the injury, there wasn't going to be a second star that was going to be willing or a second player that was going to be willing to come to New York with him. So now you had to look at it if you're the Knicks, like, do we want to then still pursue Durant even though he's going to be out a year when, of course, the Knicks are always 3 years away from being 3 years away? So I don't know if for the Knicks it made sense in that regard. But still, and it goes back to your point with the tree, Bo, can you miss something that you never had? Like can we feel as though we missed out on Durant if we never really had him?
Right, I know, and everybody, I mean, they was telling me that he was going to come there too, I understand. And then y'all used to have that unicorn dude, and he out of there, right? And then, I mean, they got him out of there so they can make room to get Marcus Morris.
You're going to keep going back to this Marcus Morris thing, huh?
Well, actually, I don't think the Marcus Morris thing is bad. See, this is why I'm saying I do think there's like some legitimate bright side here for the Knicks. Here's why. Look at what the Nets did, man. The Nets didn't have no picks. They couldn't get anybody to show up. They had to get this thing figured out the old-fashioned way. And I do feel like the Knicks are behaving like a competent organization these days. Like, I think this idea of signing all these guys that you're ultimately looking to trade at the deadline and that you're going to have off the books, I think that that is a smart play. And so I think rather than trying to rush this thing, because if they'd have got Kyrie and had no Kevin Durant, that's what, a 40-win team? And y'all wouldn't be happy with,
yeah.
And y'all wouldn't be happy with a 40-win team. You know what I mean? Like, I really do think that, like, staying low and building is the path. And y'all got some guys. That Mitchell Robinson dude, he's going to be all right. I'm not really here for the Kevin Knox. But Dennis Smith, if nothing else, will be entertaining. And RJ? Shannon, why he can't shoot?
Yeah, that's – oh, I didn't realize the lack of shooting was as bad as it's been during the summer league. I will be honest with you. Obviously, you know, he's still a young player and all of this stuff and learning the ropes. But, like, I thought the shot would have been a little bit better. And I understand you got to extend now and – you know, from the college three-point line, but it's looked bad. Like, I don't know if he has to change his entire shooting motion, but it needs to be tweaked. But getting to your point really quickly on the Knicks roster, and I do like the fact that a lot of these veterans that they signed, the Taj Gibson, your Bobby Portis, Wayne Ellington, Alfred Payton, yeah, they're two-year deals, but they're team options after the first year.
Right.
So it gives the Knicks the flexibility to, you know, to release those guys if need be, if they want to start over and do it again next season.
Right.
So I don't think in years past, with Knicks would have struck out on somebody, they would have then signed a second tier free agent just to have somebody, and they
right.
would have gave them big money.
Right.
Granted, the Julius Randle deal was probably a lot more than some people Knicks fans wanted to admit, but it wasn't the blockbuster. Hey, let's give him Amari Stoudemire the $100 million on a bad knee.
Right.
Like it wasn't that. So at least there are signs that they're moving in the right direction.
Right. See what I'm saying? Like, you guys, I ain't going to lie, man. I was so glad I was out of the country last week, because the last thing I needed to be doing was walking around on the streets of New York City with people stopping me, asking me what happened. I don't know, dog.
and right. And for Knicks fans, you know, they're always, you know, told, you know, be patient, working towards something. And it was reminiscent of the Knicks tanking prior to the 2010 free agency. But I think what made this time hurt more than 2010, the Knicks weren't really going to – they didn't have a legitimate shot to get LeBron James. I think that was more of a hope and prayer than anything else. Yeah, it would have been great to have LeBron, but we weren't going to get him. And I think this time, though, with the Kevin Durant speculation all season, like, there were legitimate talks that he had interest. So you felt as though you had a chance. Like, it was worth – the tanking and the losing and the patience that they were preaching for Knicks fans that say, hey, there's going to be light at the end of this tunnel, and that light could be one of the top one or two players in the league. And, of course, like in traditional Knicks fashion, that did not come to pass.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. Does it sting anymore because they went to the Nets?
See, now that's the interesting thing about this, and I made the comparison with the announcement of Kyrie and Durant signing with the Nets. It felt very much reminiscent of Bash at the Beach 1996 when Hogan joined the NWO. and it was like at that time, the WWF was like the Knicks, the old guard. You know, they had been the leaders for so long, and it's like the WCW was like the Nets. It was the little brother. We didn't really care. Like that's a cute story. But things got real once Hogan joined the NWO. And then you're looking over at the WWF roster, and the Knicks are very much, very much the Brooklyn Brawler, Ahmed Johnson, and Tatanka right now. Like, it doesn't add up. Like, these guys are rolling out Hall, Nash, and Hogan, and who we got?
Did you break out the Brooklyn Brawler?
Duke the Dumpster Drozy. That's what the Knicks are rolling with right now. Kevin Knox is the Brooklyn Brawler. That's what we have.
See, I feel like the Hogan thing would be like if Patrick Ewing had gone to play for the Nets, right? Like, that would have been like the full on. I do get where you're coming from on this, though. And two things on it. One, this Nets thing this year has the potential to be a disaster. Because what's the difference between this year's Nets and last year's Celtics? Right? And then we just go drop Kyrie in here.
Not to mention this, I don't think the Nets this year have the talent that last year's Celtics had. The Celtics were a legitimate deep team. Of course, they had some chemistry issues with probably starting with Kyrie, but I don't think the Nets are that. So at best, what are the Nets this year without Kevin Durant?
Well, let's see here, right? So we're talking about Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, Spencer Dinwiddie. Wow, did I get to Spencer Dinwiddie that fast?
That's it. And I'm not knocking. I'm not trying to say.
No shade. They got DeAndre Jordan now. I think there's something to that. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of Kyrie gunning. Like, right. Like this is because D'Angelo Russell had the green light to gun last year.
Right. Would anyone be surprised if Kyrie led the league in scoring next year? Because I wouldn't.
No. By the way, the Nets do have that one dude from Europe with the hops. Was it Kurucs? Have you seen him?
I'll take your word for it.
Oh, no, 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 no. You will enjoy watching him play basketball. It is entertaining. I don't know how good he is, but there's nothing quite like the European dude with springs.
Yeah, but I will say, though, of the Nets, because they don't garner the same level of attention that the Knicks, I do think that's a better fit for Kyrie when he goes off and Kung Fu Kyrie starts talking, because I think it would have been criticized a lot more had he done those type of things with the Knicks, or especially this year without a Durant, and that would have been a total disaster. So I think, yes, the focus will be more on the Nets, but it still won't be to the level that it would have been if he had gone to the Knicks and things didn't work out.
But see, I think there's a flip side to that, which is this is still a Knicks city. Right. And so I don't know what it's going to be like in a national dialogue, but it's still a Knicks city. And so people aren't going to be talking about the Nets to talk about how great the Nets are. It's going to be some hating going on. Right. There's no question about it that there's going to be hating that transpires. And if it does start going bad, then they'll get treated like the Mets. Right. So with the Mets, like you can make the argument that, you know, the Yankees get more attention, obviously, than the Mets do.
Right.
In New York, except when things are going bad. Right. And the Mets get plenty of attention when things are going bad, the same way the Jets get plenty of attention when things go bad. So if things don't go right with the Nets, I do think it'll get the same level of attention that it would be if it did with the Knicks. Just maybe less passionate because people won't be as personally invested, but I think it'll be just as loud, except the loud will be people laughing.
Right, but ultimately, how much, and I understand it's Durant and Kyrie, but how much still do the Nets register? I mean, we got the Nets. Granted, they were in Jersey, made back-to-back NBA Finals appearances. We're not too long removed from the Darren Williams, ISO Joe, you know, the Nets situation with Jason Kidd, and they were supposed to be the talk of the town, and that never really materialized. So really, how much are the Nets? Is this going to be any different than successful Nets teams of the past?
Yeah, I guess it just depends on how good they are. Now, to be fair, this would be like the first actual successful one since they moved. One would think, right? Like 03, you know, 02, 03, for example, they were down there in New Jersey. So, like, I feel like that didn't count because they had New Jersey on their chest, which it's not the same place at all. Learn that. I don't know. I think they got a chance to get some, like, to get a little something cracking. I do. And I think a huge difference between them being in New Jersey and being in Brooklyn is that you can get to that arena on the subway. You know what I mean? Like, it's they're more accessible now than I would argue that they were before. And I think if they start doing really well, like, let's say they come off the rip, like, start the season like 13-2 or something like that. They're going to get all the attention in the world, but they better stay 13-2.
Right. And I think there's one dynamic, I think, nationally that people don't realize with the Knicks and the Nets. It's not a rivalry. Like now they play in the same city, but the Nets, how often were the Nets and the Knicks ever good at the same time? Like, it's never been a rivalry. And I don't know if them being in Jersey had anything to do with it, but it never felt like a rivalry. Whereas, like, if you say, you know, Rangers Devils in hockey, that's felt more like a rivalry. Nets and Knicks have never really been a rivalry. So, like, this is uncharted territory. Like, yeah, you had the novelty of when they first moved to Brooklyn and the whole association with Jay-Z and people were interested, but that kind of wore off. And you look at last year, for example, the Nets being one of the lowest attended teams in the league. So I'm curious to see how sustainable can this new Nets run be.
Yeah, they're gonna have to win some games, but I mean, I went to a couple of Nets games last year. I went to a playoff game. In fact, because that's what the second team in the city is good for.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go see some affordable basketball.
And I went to a Nets game a couple years ago, and I enjoyed it, actually. Yep. I went to a couple Knicks games, went to a couple Nets games, and I really did enjoy the environment. I think there is a legitimate buzz and excitement still with the Nets. But I would like to see if that can be if that could be more of a mainstay and not just the novelty of, hey, it's cool, we got a team in Brooklyn, and their tickets are cheaper than in Madison Square Garden.
See, I can go see the Nets and sit in seats befitting of a man of my stature, but also pay prices within what I'm willing to pay. I ain't been to Madison Square Garden for a basketball game yet, for that very reason. I can't be back there sitting with y'all.
But on the Knicks, and I want to get your opinion on this one, Bo. Do you think the perception of the organization and the narrative of the whole Dolan thing is overblown, or you do think there's legitimate concerns around the league from players and other teams about how he manages that organization?
So, like, I certainly don't think that Dolan helps, but what I don't have a great handle on is, Like, do they at least get some of the little stuff right? Because Dolan's up there, and they've largely phased Dolan out of actually doing anything with the operation. Like, I don't feel like anything that happened this time is really Jim Dolan's fault. But if they treat people right, like, that's the thing I think that players care more about, like, with organizations and stuff like that, is do they treat you right? You know what I mean? Like, there was one team that used to charge players for Gatorade, for example.
Right.
I'm pretty sure the Knicks aren't doing that.
Right. And I've actually spoken to a couple of former Knicks players who were there during the bad years. And they, in each of them, to a man, said that the Knicks treat you great. They treat the players very, very well. He said, actually, one said that, you know, he had multiple stops in the league, and he said that he was treated best by the Knicks. Everything is first class. Hotels, meals, the whole nine. So that, I found that interesting, because you hear all the things, like, once again, about the organization, but yet the players are treated very well. But I do think one thing that hurts the Knicks is the facilities. The fact that with the Nets, you have the practice facility right there in the city. If you want to live in the city, you can. Whereas with the Knicks, that's not the case. Not to mention the difficulties that you have traveling game in and game out to Madison Square Garden. So I'm wondering why now, here we are in 2019, why don't the Knicks have a practice facility in the city? Why can't they make living more conducive to the players in the city, whereas having to travel out of the city to go to the practice facility and things like that?
No, I think those things probably matter more than Jim Dolan. Like, how many owners are good? Like, in the league, how many people be like, yo, the owner of our team is really good?
Right, and that brings me to another point. When you look at what transpired this year with free agency, and three of the better-run franchises in Golden State, Oklahoma City, and Toronto each lost star players. So how much does a well-run organization even matter, to be honest with you? Or is the free agency move all about the individual players themselves?
Well, I do think that a well-run organization ultimately matters. Like, I think from what I can tell about this modern incarnation of the Clippers, Kawhi left a well-run organization to go to another well-run organization and said no to a not-so-well-run organization. You know what I mean? And we saw how those people that turned down the Lakers through the years coming up to this point, you know, those guys who just said no, they didn't, that wasn't something that they wanted to do. Now, of course, the Lakers attracted LeBron James, who didn't give a damn about what the organization was. He used to play for Dan Gilbert. And they brought in Anthony Davis, who, what the hell he know about a well-run organization, right? Like, it's worth noting that those two guys
right.
also were all teams that were poorly run organizations. I think that most of the factors in free agency are things that, like, I think that how well-run the organization is matters, but it's probably on the same level for a lot of guys with, like, six or seven different things. So, like, the Nets, are they a well-run organization? Like, do we know that? They just got a new owner, right? Like, do we even know if they're a well-run organization? I don't know, but they offered things that those dudes found to be attractive. I think one thing we're going to have to do is we're going to have to stop thinking that we got some basic template of what it is that guys want and that they are going to sign for. Like, even though Paul George ultimately asked to get out, he did re-up from 5 years in Oklahoma City. And that's something I don't think any of us would have thought had happened. Oklahoma City got two dudes. Well, I think he made a sign for four. But anyway, he got two dudes to come back and re-up at a place where guys normally wind up leaving teams.
Right. And those two dudes, you know, and you had the rumors prior to them re-upping being, you know, California guys that they were going to go to the Lakers.
Yep.
And ultimately, at the time, they chose re-upping in OKC as opposed to signing with the Lakers.
And please understand, my mama is from Oklahoma City. She ain't re-up on that. She left in 1960. I mean, she visits. She was out.
Right, and that brings up another point in this whole free agency discussion. And you saw it with Kemba Walker, the idea that guys want to go home.
No!
No, they don't. And Kemba Walker made it known from the start. Like, I don't want to go back. Like I, you know, I love New York, I love the city, but I don't want to go back.
I'd love to hear somebody where they be like, you want to go back home? They'd be like, yeah, you come home with me one time and see if you want to do that. Right, there's some dude that's just like, yo, man, I just can't be around them no more. This is not what I need in my life. And also, I think it's worth noting on that come home notion. You are a native New Yorker, but you moved to Virginia when you were in your teens.
Right.
You ain't going back.
For what? For who? What am I doing? there's two type of New Yorkers, right? You got the ones who are never leaving. Like, they're good. They're still renting the same apartment that they grew up in. They're never leaving. Like, I get that. And you got those who left and realized, hey, wait a minute, there's a world outside of this. I ain't never coming back. And guess what? I'm in the latter. That's me, never coming back. Love the visit. Was in New York last week, as a matter of fact. Went to Coney Island for 4th of July. That's all well and good, but guess what I got to do after 4th of July? Left.
Bro, right. Not everybody is trying to come home. Because, you know, people have been holding out hope that Blake Griffin might go to Oklahoma City because he's from there.
Yeah, no, that's not happening.
It's not going down.
I'm sorry. That's not happening. Now, getting back to the Knicks, and I wanted to pose this question to you. Do you think the Knicks and their approach to free agency and the whole thing of, you know, because there were rumors that, you know, selling Durant on the, you know, the off the court potential and all those things. Do you think those are antiquated at this point? Do you think they have to change the pitch? Because obviously it's not the product on the court because they haven't won or haven't been competitive in almost 20 years.
Now, I don't think they need to change the pitch because dudes do want to be stars. Right? Like, we're not out here dealing with a bunch of these yeomen that's just out here trying to grind and do nothing but play basketball. Like, these dudes do want to do this other stuff. You also have to be able to sell the basketball, though. Like, that was the problem that the Lakers had, is that the Lakers were out here trying to sell people on Hollywood, and they're like, yo, but I play basketball. How about something? Anything about the basketball? Now, I think that is a decent sell. The only thing I think, though, is that that sell isn't the one to give to Kevin Durant. The reason it's not the sell to give to Kevin Durant is, number one, Kevin Durant has probably himself already thought about this. Number two, Kevin Durant became a giant worldwide star playing in Oklahoma City. So what you're pitching, it might not even ultimately be that valuable to him for that reason. You know what I mean? Like that's where I think they're off. But I do think you could tell a dude like Julius Randle, for example, like, yo, you're going to be a bigger star here than you would be wherever these other places is that you've been. And you understand what I mean? Like, it might work on that tier of guy.
Right. Not to mention the whole selling New York thing. Not, you got the Nets here. I mean, the Nets can sell that whole New York thing as well. Granted, doesn't have the name that the Knicks do, but you can sell the New York thing as being a member of the Nets. Not to mention, Hey, we have a good product on the court. We have a quote unquote a well-run organization, you know, whatever that means. So you can sell those things now. Whereas with the Knicks, I don't know how you counter that to say this is what differentiates us from a Nets at this point.
You know what they got to do? They got to run that organization well. Like, that's really what it's going to take. I think on that level, they have to run the organization well, and they got to hit on a draft pick. And I think that's the part about the Knicks situation that's a bit underrated. When's the last time they truly hit on a draft pick? Porzingis? I mean, I guess Porzingis kind of counts.
Right. And that's the thing that makes the whole Porzingis situation so frustrating is that, okay, if you're the Knicks and you've struck out in free agency, so what's another option of building a team? Let's build through the draft. Okay. Let's build through the draft. Let's make a guy our own and build him up, make him an all-star. That's essentially what they did with Porzingis, and it still went left. So it's like now we're starting over again. Like, it's always hitting the reset button with the Knicks. And now the hope was, you know, okay, let's tank. Hopefully we get the first pick, get Zion. That didn't work. Now, Barrett can be a good consolation prize, yes, and I'm not knocking him for that, but it's still not the same level of star potential that Zion could have been.
Yeah, I think they made the right call on Porzingis, by the way. Even if they didn't sign anybody from trading him, I think they made the right call on Porzingis.
And ultimately, I do as well. The only problem I do have with the Porzingis thing, though, was that, you know, listening to other executives around the league, that the Knicks didn't really take long shopping Porzingis. I think the Knicks could have listened to a few more offers and maybe even got a better deal. Granted, they got a really good deal being able to unload Courtney Lee and Tim Hardaway Jr.'s contract that the Knicks, for some reason, re-signed and gave him a big deal. But they were able to unload those contracts, get two future first round picks from the Mavs and have the cap flexibility. So I think ultimately it achieved what it wanted to. But at the same time, you have to wonder what more could they have gotten?
Yeah, I think that's fair, right? But I think what's going to happen is Porzingis is going to go down there and play in Dallas. And if he starts playing well, it's going to be, oh, you silly Knicks. Like, first of all, let's not forget there's something hanging in that situation. I don't really know how to deal with it right now, but there's something hanging over there.
That doesn't get talked about, but
yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, because we don't talk about it because we don't know what to do, because all we got really is an accusation, but it's still hanging, right? Dallas actually has something really kind of fascinating going on there with him and Doncic. I don't know how this is really going to go together, but it sounds like the Knicks seem to decide that Porzingis was more trouble than he was worth, and it takes a lot for an NBA team to decide that about somebody. Hey, didn't that dude get run up on the other day at the crib?
At the crib of all places. Getting back to what we talked about. For some folks, they can't go back. You know, like, you can't go home. Like, it's all well and good. That's where you're from. You love your place. You love your country. But you can't go back. Because everybody ain't happy to see you when you come back.
Let me tell you what I worry about, though, man. Porzingis and his whole squad, they all wear white t-shirts. That's a bad sign, bro. You notice that? Wasn't his whole squad wearing white tees?
That makes me think back to the picture of Porzingis when he was a kid and he had the cornrows and the headband.
Yeah, but like, think about it, man. When you at the club and a squad full of dudes in white tees walk up, what you thinking? In fact, most clubs we go to got a whole set of thing on the wall specifically for them. And you know what that list of things says? No white tees.
Right at the top.
No athletic gear. No white tees, no sneakers, no athletic gear. Is that the Holy Trinity?
That's the Holy Trinity. That's right at the top. That's from start. That's before you even pass go. That's like, you gotta know that from jump. That this ain't going down like this. I don't care what league you play in. No white tees. Not to mention, you too old to be in a club that allows someone to go in there wearing a white tee.
Yeah, like what neighborhood was he in Latvia where you show up at the club in the white tee? It was a white tee and a chain. Like, it was like, yo, what is this? 1999? I mean, different size on the tee, obviously. There it was.
But you got to understand, it can't be that. Not you. No. Not anymore. No.
No. You need to be somewhere with some ropes. You know? You need to be in a place that wouldn't let you in 5 years ago.
Exactly. And I think that's the biggest sign of your come up as a person. Athlete or not. Like, can I get into this club that I wouldn't have been able to get into 5 years ago? Can I get access to VIP if I wanted it, where I wouldn't have maybe 5-10 years ago?
Yes.
And if the answer is no, you got a lot more work to do.
Yes. Now, on the point of access, though, see that when you talk about the Knicks sale, I would say the best sale that you could get from being on the Knicks is the day-to-day access to people that you have. Like, honestly, think about this. You play for the Knicks. You just warming up before the game and 45 minutes before the game. Think about all the money that you can meet just talking to the dudes who sit in the lower bowl. Because you know that's how that goes. You know what I mean? At NBA arenas, the dudes are out there, people talking to anybody. Right. Think about all the money that you can meet just shooting jumpers before the game. That would be my sell.
Right. And that access, you know, to those people, and not just the celebrities, but to the real deal money.
The money.
The real deal money. The people that look like money. And I went to a Knicks game and sat courtside. That was a little bit of a humble brag, but so sat courtside at a Knicks game this past year. And the amount of money, you can tell, like, I saw a couple people. I didn't know what dude did, but I know he did something.
Yeah, I remember looking on Instagram and seeing you sitting courtside and being like, did Shannon forget I live here?
And getting a game ball from James Dolan afterwards, but that's not the point.
I mean, if you want to brag about that, feel free.
Or him asking my son if he wanted to take a picture, and Braylon was like, "Nah. I'm good."
No thanks. You ain't no hooper,
right? But then, like with Dolan, with that though, I think the Knicks still do have to repair some PR. You know, like with Dolan, the Oakley thing is still hanging out there. I think that's legit. Still hanging out there. We're a couple years removed from that, but that's still legit. You had the situation this past year when he threatened a fan to ban him from the Garden. Like, those things, albeit on the grand scale, maybe not be as big with the fan, but it's not a good look, you know?
Yes.
And from the a certain perspective from the people who are watching from afar, that still to them is same old Knicks, same old James Dolan. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. Seeing it firsthand, especially this year, I don't think that's the case anymore. And the Knicks need to let that be known.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case. I mean, you even have the beef that they have now with the New York Daily News. Like, you gotta end that. Like,
yeah.
you gotta build up and get into good graces with some folks. Cause, you know, a lot of times New York media, they're looking to write bad stuff about you if you give them reasons. But if you don't give them reasons to write that stuff, then that'll help you in the long run, I think.
Look, man, if they get out here and win 35 games. Like 35, 36 games. I honestly think that's give reason, people a little reason to believe in it.
Right. And
just
I think
a little
like this past year, you had the league's worst record, but it wasn't all doom and gloom. Like the crowds went to a couple games, like I said, and the crowds were still into it. I went to a Knicks Cleveland Cavaliers game this year and the crowd was into it. Because there's hope. Like, even aside from the free agency potential last year, you still had, hey, we have this core of young players and they're getting playing time. You're at least working towards something. You're not in basketball purgatory.
Yeah, Knicks fans didn't hate this team.
No, not at all. And I think having Fizdale is the right coach for the situation because he has clout, he has name recognition, he has the skins on the wall, and he has respect of people in this league. So I think with him, Scott Perry, like, the Knicks aren't looked at as the sideshow that they were, say, three, four years ago with Phil Jackson.
How about this? I got something for you, man. You from Brooklyn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just
no
rock with the
no
Nets?
No, no. I don't have any ill will towards the Nets, But that's not happening. You know why? Because the Nets weren't there with me in 1994 in Game 7. They weren't there with me if your favorite player is John Starks and he's a Hall of Famer in the city of Houston. No, the Nets weren't there with me. Yeah, I rocked with Kenny Anderson. Yeah, I rocked with Derek Coleman and those guys. But they weren't there with me in 94.
He was your favorite player?
Yeah, John Starks, my favorite player of all time. Absolutely.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize that.
Absolutely.
You need to come to Houston, man. I'm just saying, man. You'd be amongst your people down there.
And they give him the key to the city yet?
I was about to say, you walk around with a John Starks jersey in Houston, you're going to be drinking for free.
Gosh.
Just say it.
Like, that gets back to the whole free agency thing. June 30th. Was this the worst day in New York Knicks history? Of course not. Were you not paying attention? Were you not there in 94? Were you not there with Smith stopped again in 93? Were you not there with Patrick Ewing in the Mitch Finger Roll in 95 against the Pacers? Were you not there with P.J. Brown and Charlie Ward in 1997? Were you not paying attention?
Oh, man.
Come on now. Were you not there when you got swept in the NBA Finals, but you got a five-game sweep in the NBA Finals in 95 and 99, and that was looked at as a good thing?
Yeah.
You weren't there with me.
Y'all were the 8 seed, and you made the Finals. You were like scrappy underdogs.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we beat the Heat and the Pacers that year, so that was the Knicks championship. Getting out of the first round in the playoffs is a reason for ticker tape parade. And you weren't there with me, Brooklyn, or Nets fans, I should say.
But they ain't never do nothing to you neither.
And see, that's why I don't hate them. I don't hate Nets just like the Jets. I'm a Giant fan, obviously. I don't hate the Jets. They haven't given me a reason really to dislike them. Like, there's not a real animosity there for me. I wish them well. I don't want to see them win a championship, but I wish them well all the same.
I'm just saying, I feel like the Crib would welcome you back.
Of course they will. Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying, the Crib.
I'm sure they will, and I'll be right back there. Brooklyn, son, where Brooklyn at? All of that sounding like Uncle Glenn, but that's not going to happen. I can't do it. I got time invested in this relationship, me and the Knicks. I got time, Bo. I put in 25 plus years in this relationship. I can't just throw it out on a whim just because they had a bad offseason. I can't do it.
A bad offseason?
Several bad off seasons, bro. I can't do it. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, but I'm not going to run into the arms of another team. I can't do it. I will tell you this, though. I was close on June 30th. I had to contemplate where I was in my life. I had to look at things from the outside and reevaluate how I go about doing things, Bo. Did happen.
You was over there listening to the Wait Next Hell soundtrack.
Absolutely. Shoot. I was absolutely like, man, you know, the Clippers, if they get quiet, they wouldn't be too bad.
11 years. It's a tough go, man. It's a tough go. I feel for you. I do. I do.
But ultimately, I think they're on the right track, just the slow track. Like, they're not on the express at all. They're on the local. And they're going to make every stop on this way to the road to success right now.
That's more people to get on the bandwagon.
See, that's what it is. And I'm telling you this right now, because I know Gabe, when he tweeted this out, he used the hashtag Knicks Tape. All right, all you new Knicks fans back when Knicks Tape was a thing a couple years ago. Like, where were you? If you were there in the Knicks Tape and jumped on the bandwagon, I want you to still be here now when we're in our darkest time. Because when the Knicks rise again like the Phoenix, whenever that does happen, whether or not I'm alive or not, I want you to look back on this time and say, who was there with you? When the Knicks missed out on Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, did you get a call from overseas from your boy? And if that didn't happen, I don't want to hear from you.
I'm just saying, thin line between rising like the Phoenix and being the Phoenix Suns. Let me ask you a question, though. We'll let you calm down a little bit. What do you think about Kawhi Sosa?
First of all, when I heard you use Kawhi Sosa in a promo, I laughed out loud, literally. So kudos to you, sir, for that, because that was the ultimate G move on that. I love it. I love the fact that, you know, we got so many prognosticators and everybody, you know, this person and I got, you know, sources this, my sources that, and this team is out of it. No, that's not the case. And I love the unpredictability about it. But I will say with Kawhi making his decision, like, you couldn't help a bro out. Like, look, I produce a show from 9 p to 1 a Eastern time, all right? So I'm on the radio up until 1 a.m. on Friday night, and you want to wait to about 2 o'clock to make this decision, to make this public? Like, you couldn't help me out and do that about an hour or two earlier, so I had some content on a slow Friday night? You couldn't help me out? Like, yeah, you knew you were going to the Clippers. You couldn't just make that decision so we could have had a guest on, had some reaction, you know, do a promo or two, do some, do a blink, do a rejoin. You couldn't help me out?
Yo, let me tell you a couple of interesting things that I've picked up on this. One, I talked to somebody who has seen, like, some of Kawhi's interaction with his fellow players. And he was like, basically, it sounded like him reading those texts is like when people used to call to Michael Jackson in real life and hear Michael Jackson's real voice. Not the, you know, not the kiddie voice.
Right.
But the, you know, the Michael Jackson voice.
The grown man Michael Jackson.
Yeah, exactly.
Voice, right.
Apparently, Kawhi, they'd be like, my man told me, he was like, yo, I wondered if somebody else was writing these texts. Like, apparently, there's a whole world of Kawhi that we don't know nothing about, right? There's that part. The other thing is, the more I look at it, because the people who said the Clippers were out of it and then Kawhi wound up going there, a lot of them are getting the blues. I think there's room for everybody to be right on that. I do think the Clippers were out of it if they couldn't get somebody else to run with them.
Right.
Right. And so it just so happened that Kawhi walked in with somebody to run with him and then they made it happen. But if they didn't have somebody to run with him, like I think if the Raptors don't trade for Paul George or the Clippers don't trade for Paul George, if neither of those teams traded for Paul George, Kawhi probably goes to the Lakers. Mm-hmm. At that point, like, I do think that the Clippers, as they were constituted, were out of it. But then out of nowhere, they found a way to get Paul George. And it don't sound like they was working on that all week.
And that's the remarkable thing about it is the fact that, like, Kawhi essentially put that together. Like, at the last minute, it was like, hey, you know, this is my boy Paul George out there. You know, if you want to put together, say, you know, 3 or 4 first round picks and include, you know, Gallinari and this guy. Like, it seemed like Kawhi put this all together in a short period of time.
Yeah.
So that begs the difference. Like, if Kawhi was able to do this, why couldn't other teams who wanted, say, the New York Knicks who wanted a pair of Durant with another superstar, why couldn't they finagle or find a way to bring in a second star? How was Kawhi able to unlock the code of this Paul George thing a year after re-upping with the team? How was he able to figure this out? And we got 29 other teams in the league that couldn't do the same thing.
Yo, and he sent Paul George with marching orders. Like, yo, get out, let him know. Like, I think the power move on Kawhi's end is a bit overstated, but the strategy is not, right? The reason I say the power move is overstated is that Sam Presti is the one who flexed the power. Because, look, at the end, Sam Presti could have – I feel like Sam Presti would have told Paul George, sorry, playboy, we can't even do it. And then Paul George would have gone back to Oklahoma City, and it really wouldn't have been a thing. Like, I think everybody would have moved on, right, and like, the world would have kept on spinning. Nah, man, Sam Presti was like, so you're telling me that this restart that I know we need to make, you just gave me an excuse? I can tear this whole thing down right now? I give him the props. And he was like, oh, okay, cool. This opportunity ain't coming again. That dude, you realize this, that from, I think, like 2022 to 2026 or something like that. No, it might be 2020 to 2026. They got 2 first-round picks, like, every year but one. Or the possibility of 2 first-round picks every year but one.
Right.
And that's a team that knows it can only get this done by striking through picks and trades. They can't get this done with free agents.
Right. And you mentioned, too, like, if Paul George would have went back to Oklahoma City – like, what's the ceiling for that pairing, him and Westbrook, anyway? It would have been probably another first-round exit, maybe a second round. But they weren't going to win a championship with that duo. And for Sam Presti to understand that and say, hey, it's time for the rebuild, let's go ahead and do that now. And now that moves on with the next question, though, with Westbrook, though. One, aside from even looking at possible destinations for him, what do you still have in Westbrook? Like, what's the fit there with Westbrook? Is he the guy that you bring in to take you over the top, or is he the guy to get you in that conversation?
Yo, let me find this text that Cortez sent us before the show, because I alluded to it on television generally, but I didn't give the specifics, and the specifics are noteworthy. In 648 minutes, with Westbrook playing and Paul George on the bench, OKC had a minus 6.8 net rating last year. In 860 minutes with George playing and Westbrook on the bench, the Thunder's net rating was positive 6.2. That's what scares me.
Really?
That's what scares me. He might be finished. And you know how I feel about Russell Westbrook as a basketball player. But it's possible that he is finished.
Has he reached Melo territory?
I don't know. Now, one thing I think that becomes tricky, though, with Westbrook is that he was hurt early and he was much better later in the year than he was before. But the fact that his free throw percentage has fallen by 20 points over the last 2 seasons, and on the in-between, there was, like, it went from, like, 85 to 73 to 66. That is where I'm like, yo, what is really going on here? Like, this could be fun to watch, but I don't know how much he has left, like, as a productive basketball player. And his game has no dial back. Like, there's no, like, I don't know how Russell Westbrook becomes a dude that just comes off the bench and gives you like 19 minutes a game.
Right. Not to mention, like, and similar to, say, a Derrick Rose, I'm curious to see what is Westbrook's game when he starts, when the physical stuff starts taking a step back, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, what does his game, if he can't reach that next level of speed and fast break? Like, what is there? Because he's never been a standstill shooter. So what's his game if he starts losing some of that?
Look, man, he don't need to do nothing this offseason but shoot jumpers. Save your legs and just shoot J's, man. Don't be out here running. Don't be an under. Just shoot the jumper. Because, I mean, I have no idea what the future is. Like, some of these teams out here, I'd try. Even at the price tag, like if Miami made the attempt at him with the price tag, I wouldn't blame them. The only problem is, after you got him, you ain't going to be able to trade him to nobody else. Like, I don't see how that happens once you got him.
Right, and looking at that contract, what is he getting, like close to $50 million a year towards the end of that deal?
Yeah, for the next 4 years.
Ooh.
I think it's $171 million.
Ooh.
Or something like that for the next 4 years. Yo, the league is wild, man. Like, I mean, who really can say with some confidence they know who's going to win a championship this year? Because I can't.
And so I know the parity conversations have been brought up the last couple of weeks, though. So do you think we legitimately have it now? Because we've talked about in years past, like even last year, like, this team can do it. But I think legitimately there's probably seven teams, maybe even eight if you stretch it, that have a legitimate sell that, hey, we can win the title. And I think we've seen it, especially what happened last year with Toronto.
Here's what we have. Off-season parity. We have parity in this discussion. Something tells me that once the year starts, it's going to start looking like an NBA season. But as of right now, we have off-season parity. But it's also in part because we don't know anything about these teams, right? Like, is the parity that we're discussing a byproduct of an even distribution of talent, or the fact that, is there any team that you can really say, like, that's at anywhere near the top of the league, other than Milwaukee, that you're like, yo, this looks like the team they had last year. And even Milwaukee looking like that, it'll feel like it looked like that because Malcolm Brogdon was hurt for the postseason right. So much, and now he's gone.
Right.
But the Lakers don't look like they looked last year.
And
the Clippers don't look like they looked last year. Like we could really run through this. Like, all these teams, how many of them actually look like they did last year? I don't see it.
Right, and I think the biggest reason, aside from all the off-season moves, I think really the biggest reason that lends to the whole parity discussion is that the Warriors aren't going to be what they were last year.
Yes.
And I think that's the biggest one, because I think even if you had all these moves, Kawhi going to the Clippers, you know, Anthony Davis, LeBron with the Lakers, if the Warriors were what they were last year, even with a Durant, but still having a healthy Klay Thompson for the duration of a season, if the Warriors were what they've been the last couple of years, we're not having this parity discussion.
No.
Because it's still the Warriors and everyone else.
Yes, and the Warriors might still win 50 games this year.
Wouldn't that be crazy if they win 50 games but still won't be the Warriors that they've been?
Yeah, I have no idea. Like I say, there's another team. I have no idea what they're going to look like.
Because I'm intrigued of how they incorporate D'Angelo Russell. And also with that, they're already having very public discussions that he's not going to be in it for the long haul.
Yeah. Well, he knows. I mean, they got him because that was literally the only way that they could do anything to improve their team. Right? And so they bring him in. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to get anybody that wasn't going to be like a $5 or $6 million player.
Right.
That's all they could have brought in. And now they have a guy that makes $20 million a year, who's young, who's a pretty good player. So you can flip him and turn him into something else if this isn't working. But D'Angelo Russell was their only path to improvement. The only one. The only thing that's going to happen with them is, I don't know how they're, outside of Steph, how are they going to score points? And what is their defense going to be like without Klay Thompson?
Right, and I think that's something that's been overlooked in the years past. Yes, Draymond Green has won Defensive Player of the Year, but I think really, and yeah, and his communication is great and all those things, I'm not taking anything from Draymond, but really it's Klay Thompson's ability to guard the other team's best wing defender night in and night out. Oh, and not to mention be able to put up 20-something points himself.
Yes. And also, dude, 2016 was 3 years ago. Like, Steph Curry is not as good now as he was then. And Steph Curry is now hit 30 years old, if I'm not mistaken. These guys aren't getting any better. Draymond Green's not going to get better. And I assume that Draymond got his mind right at the end of last year because somebody must have told him that he was going to get that extension,
right.
You know, get that max. What happens if it starts looking like he's not going to get that max?
Ooh. Ooh.
Right. By the way, should they give him that max?
And also, too, if there's no guarantee that he's going to get that max, I'm sure he's going to be very vocal about his feelings about not having commitment with that max that he's felt he's earned and he probably has. But as you and I have talked about in years past, you get a new contract based upon what we think you're going to do in the future, not what you've done in the past.
If I'm the Warriors, I am spending from now until February seeing what somebody might want to give us for Draymond Green.
So my question to you with that, like, is the Warriors run over?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's done.
Finito. Nope. Like, that's it.
Yeah, no question. It's done. No shade to them, but, like, that for them was like the 98 finals for the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We just never saw that team come back together. But, no, they're done. I mean, and they had a fantastic run, and this is about how long runs go. But, again, all those dudes are going to be worse than they were before. Iguodala is gone.
Right.
Sean Livingston is gone. How do you replace those guys? I don't have an answer for that.
And I'll be interested just to watch Steph like this year, like to see what his approach is. Like, it can't be just, hey, I'm gonna do my thing, I'll score my points. It can't be just that this year.
Dog, why did somebody just send me something that says Swaggy P said Steve Kerr rolls the best blunt in the NBA?
Well, he has his back issues in the past. I'm just saying.
There's that.
I'm just saying.
There's that.
You know, pain management.
Who knew that Steve Kerr had such fine motor skills?
He wasn't one of the best shooters in the league for nothing.
Yeah, no. I guess that's strong fingers.
A different meaning for shotgun, I guess.
Yeah. Ain't that? Who knew?
Real quick, Bob, I wanted to ask you. We talked so much earlier about the Knicks-Nets dynamic in New York. How do you think it plays out in L.A. with Lakers-Clippers?
The Lakers are still the Lakers, and the Clippers are still the Clippers. The difference, though, is what you talk about with there never being a rivalry is the case also in L.A., but the Clippers have been good now for like 7 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I'd say the relevance of the Clippers actually goes back to Blake Griffin's rookie year. Like, that's when we started paying attention to him. And then the year after that, they got Chris Paul. You know what I mean? And so, like that, that's what we got. And people are used to the idea of the Clippers being good. What that means is Laker fans are far more resentful of the Clippers than Knicks fans are of the Nets, in part because, like, who are the Knicks to resent anyone?
Right. I agree.
And they play in the same building. So this is going to be interesting. What we're going to find out is truly how many Clippers fans there are, because they do exist. They really do. I don't know about Nets fans, though. Do Nets fans exist?
What's the Net fan market that's not Nick fan? You know, like, right. I don't get, like, is it the folks that are just Jersey?
I have definitely met more Clippers fans in my life than I have Nets fans.
I agree. And that's saying quite a bit about the Nets, I guess.
like, and I'm not shading nobody with that. I'm just telling you, like, I don't know those people. Craig Kilborn was once interviewing Joey Lawrence. You remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Right.
And he asked me, he was like, so your last album sold 5 million copies. And Joey said, yes. And Kilborn says, then how come nobody I know has it? That's how I feel about some of these teams and their fans. How come I don't know none of y'all? Like, y'all say y'all so deep. Y'all say y'all so kind of nation.
Right. I guess the Net fans are going to be all the new gentrified Bed-Stuy New Yorkers, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like, well, the Nets are going for an interesting thing in the way they push that franchise. Like, it's an interesting game to go to because they got beats.
Right.
And they knock hard.
Very much a hip-hop feel, yes.
Yeah, they're very much going for the, like, where Brooklyn at sort of thing, except that Brooklyn doesn't exist anymore. And so, like, I can't tell exactly how the new Brooklyn relates to that and whether it's all, like, they're building the whole branding of the team around Biggie Smalls. And I don't know if that's, and I mean, it's cool for me. I just don't know if that's the base that they actually trying to get.
Right, and I thought, honestly, that by this point, with them being in Brooklyn now some years, that they would have kind of started to stray away from that a bit. Like, I get it. When you first came, like I said, you had the Jay-Z ties to him. You had the whole Biggie thing, the Coogee. Like, I get that. But I thought by this point they would start to move away and get more of their identity, because that where Brooklyn at, Brooklyn doesn't exist anymore.
Ah, baby, they riding this out. They riding this out. Like that arena, like the neighborhood that arena is in, it kind of feels out like, you know how Marv Albert and Stephon Marbury went to the same high school? It's kind of like that.
Right.
You know? Like, things have changed around here.
Right. Rudy Giuliani and Mark Jackson both going to Bishop Laughlin. Like, that's different. That's not that anymore.
Once upon a time, but not, how about this? Dan Dockage, born Gary, Indiana.
Wait. Are we talking about the same Gary, Indiana? Like, mm-hmm. the same, like, original gangsters Gary, Indiana?
Yeah, man. Things change a little bit. Neighborhood change. By the way, that's no shade to Dan Dockage. Don't want any confusion. I'm just saying, even he knows that Gary he grew up in is not the same as the Gary that's over there right now.
That's not the Denise Williams. Let's hear for the boys,
no,
Gary,
no,
Indiana.
No. It's not that one. It's not that one at all. Although I'm looking at it, Dan Dockage was born in 1962. You think he know any of them Jacksons?
Everybody that I've met that's from Gary, Indiana knows one of them Jacksons. Every single one knows one of them Jacksons or are related to one of them Jacksons.
You ever see Freddie Gibbs tell the story about the time that Mike came to Gary and rolled up in the limo? It was like out the roof of the limo and everybody was so excited and they wanted like Mike to give them stuff. So Mike went to KFC, came back and threw chicken at the people.
They were better for it too.
That's, yeah. But if I'm not mistaken, Mike was born in 1958. It says here, Dockage was born in 1962. That's it. That's the Janet age range, right?
So we got to get on this because now you got me intrigued. We have to send word out to Dan Dockage whether or not he went to school or knew one of the Jacksons.
What if
we have to make that our mission, Bo?
What if Dan Dockage's first grade girlfriend was Janet Jackson?
Dan Dockage was like, who, Jermaine? Man, I used to play ball with Jermaine up the street, man. That ain't nothing. Yeah,
I used to wear him out.
Yeah, he was like, well, that hair, he didn't have that process hair back then. I used to wear his butt out. Ask about me.
That's right. In fact, go ask Michael Jordan, too.
Somehow, some way, he always weaves the Michael Jordan thing
into
every conversation.
Wouldn't you? I would work that into every conversation I ever had. If I ever had a game where I put the clamps on Michael Jordan, first of all those t-shirts I have of that time I put the clamps on Michael Jordan, I mean, I don't know. I couldn't buy enough of them, number one. Like, we all got a go-to story. Like, what's your go-to?
Oh, boy. Oh, probably mine would be the pickup game with Allen Iverson prior to his rookie year.
Yeah.
And him calling ISO because he realized that I was guarding him. And I turned around and looked around and saw that everyone on my team obliged with Allen Iverson's ISO call, and they left me out there on an island. So me being the person that I was, the 14-year-old, I was like, who am I to try to guard Allen Iverson going into rookie year, number one overall pick? So he went by me, and I went ahead and let him.
See, I was thinking of the other direction, kind of like, it doesn't have to be a basketball story per se, but you remember that one time I was on TV, and there was like this actress who complimented my wardrobe? Like, you know what I mean? Where they, yes, Bomani, we've heard this one before. We all got something that people are like, yes, we've, like, Pablo's so tired of hearing about that time that I dunked in a basketball game. Right? That's the best way to put it. That time I dunked in a basketball game and almost died for it. Pablo's so tired of hearing about that story. Not so much because I tell it all the time, but because he can't touch the net. Anyway, he's so tired of hearing that story. Now imagine if I had ever put the clamps on Michael Jordan. You'd hear about that on every show.
Uncle Glenn got a story about Michael Jordan that I know is not real, but he tells it as if it was. That one time he played one-on-one with Michael Jordan in Danville, Virginia, because Michael Jordan was up there pulling tobacco. I don't know, you know, like it's one of those comes to America, you know, Martin Luther King stories. Like, I don't know if it's real or not, but he tells it with such fervor and such passion. It's like, yo, maybe this did happen. I don't know, but I'm willing to accept it.
And he tells it all the time, I'm sure.
Right. Oh, yeah, that reminds me. It was Michael. Yeah, before he went to Carolina, yeah, he was up here pulling tobacco on the back of a truck, and it was like, yeah, Uncle Glenn, that didn't happen, Uncle Glenn. No, it did happen. It was him. It was a dark-skinned dude who was from North Carolina. Like, Michael is the only one.
Everybody's got a story. I'm just saying that to say, don't blame Dan Dockage. All right, and ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We try to do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bastain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, be sure to check out the Woj Pod this week. He's in Vegas for Summer League and had on Pelicans GM David Griffin. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time and the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we will talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.